Thank you for being here tonight. Got a great opportunity to study again, and we have so many things to think about that God gives us to think about every day. And right now, with the presidential election still in doubt, is that the way it is, Stephen? Just kidding. Although that may not be funny to some of you. But as we think about the presidential election that has gone on and the political war that we've gone through for a long time now, we think about so many problems with our own government. And then when we look into the world and we see what's going on out there, there are a lot of struggles in our world with governmental agencies and organizations throughout the world. I would think that there are few that have only a few struggles. Most have many, many struggles. And we may sometimes be amazed at how God requires us to serve so diligently. And so what we're looking at in this passage in chapter 13 of the book of Romans is still under our heading of service. We must serve within our governmental system. That would be true nationally, it would be true statewide in America, it would be true in our local communities. And so we have a lot that we have to be thoughtful about, but we have a lot to be thankful for because of what God has done to us. Tonight, as we take a look at chapter 13, these three topics are going to be covered by me. You probably would select different headlines or topics if you were teaching, and that's okay because there's so much to say and there's so many ways to look at how this comes to us. We're going to talk about, first of all, our responsibility to government. And then Paul changes gears and talks about our responsibility to one another. And then as this chapter comes to a conclusion, there is a responsibility to look at right now. Salvation is nearer to us today than it was yesterday, a few minutes ago, however you want to look at it. But we have some responsibility for right now, today, to think about. So those are the three topics that I'm going to use tonight to discuss Romans chapter 13. I want to read to you verses 1 through 7, if you want to follow with me. That's going to be the passage that deals with our responsibility to government. Let every person be subject to governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authorities resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. For rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. Would you have no fear of the one who is in authority? Then do what is good, and you will receive his approval. For he is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is a servant of God, an avenger who carries out God's wrath on the wrongdoer. Therefore, one must be in subjection, not only to avoid God's wrath, but also for the sake of conscience. For because of this, you also pay taxes, for the authorities are ministers of God, attending to this very thing. Pay to all what is owed to them. Taxes to whom taxes are owed, revenue to whom revenue is owed, respect to whom respect is owed, and honor to whom honor is owed. Now, as we think about this particular topic, verses 1 and 2, as you listen to them or read them with me, deal with the government's legitimate authority and the Christian's response. Sometimes you might hear our president say, "I am the president." That statement carries with it authority. It carries with it authority across the street. When the president of the university speaks to those who work in the university, there's some real authority to it given to the president by the board of trustees. But our governing authorities are given and are legitimized by God Himself. So we have to be subject to governing authorities. There's some things that we don't like. We grind. I am sure that there's at least one person in this room like me. If I'm in a hurry and I head out Highway 100 on a school morning, I grind. I'm wanting to get through that. I have to confess, I'm a lot better at it now. I'm describing me 10 years ago. I would get in that school zone and I would just think, I've got to get this thing going. And I would grind and I hated it. Sometimes there would be nobody in sight, full speed ahead, no traffic, but this blinking light that says 25 miles per hour. We don't like the governing authorities sometimes restraining us in ways that don't feel good to us at the time. There are a lot of things that don't feel good to us at times. We're coming upon tax season, and that doesn't feel good to anybody except people like Barry Smith, who fills out tax returns and makes a living doing those kinds of things. But the average person doesn't really feel great about tax season. So we must be subject to. Now, I'm an exception to a lot of things, aren't I? No, I'm not. And I'm definitely not an exception to being responsible to governing authorities, and neither are any of you. Paul says every soul, Christians, non-Christians, all of us are subject to governing authorities. Now, over and over again, we've been taught that is, except in circumstances where the governing authority requires you to disobey God. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they were treated horribly because they would not bow down to the governing authority. Their faith and their confidence, when the king told them, if you don't bow down, we're going to throw you into the fiery furnace, who's going to deliver you then? They said, well, our God is able to deliver us. But even if he doesn't, we will not bow down. It's a great example for us with regard to being subject to governing authorities to a point. And it's every one of us. And the reason every one of us is to be subject to the government is because there is no authority except from God. We may have elected a president for this coming year. And we may have thought, man, the vote is it. And we may have even talked about that. And we pushed people out. And there were many organizations out there telling people to vote. Your vote counts. Well, I'll tell you whose vote counts most of all. And that's God's vote. Because there is no authority. No authority in any land except that it be from God. And the authorities that exist are appointed by God. You think God made a mistake in our presidential election? You think God made a mistake in some prime minister somewhere in the world? You think God made a mistake in some kingdom in the world? You see, we see, if we look at God's word, God uses every kind of circumstance to accomplish his will. There were few people at times worse than Nebuchadnezzar. God makes it clear, he is my servant. God sent him to do the things that he did to Israel, to Judah. And so when we start looking at the governing authorities and what God is looking at, sometimes we scratch our heads and think, how in this world could God have appointed that person? Look at the moral stances that they take and the moral behavior that they undertake. God uses every kind of circumstance to accomplish his will. They are appointed by God. Therefore, Paul says, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God. I think I told the story about passing on a double line down in Hardeman County. I even said to Jan before I passed, we were driving along about 30 miles an hour, and I never got above 55 before the highway patrolman stopped me, and it was Bobby, one of our members. I'm not any exception. He said, I know you weren't speeding. I know you weren't reckless. But he said, it's the law. You must wait until that person pulls over or until there's a passing lane. Very clear. But you see, I already knew that because I said to Jan, I may get pulled over for this, but I'm going to pass this guy. And I got pulled over for that. I'm not an exception. And when I did that, I resisted not just the authority of that highway patrolman or that county or the state of Tennessee, but the authority of God and what God ordains for us. We don't like it sometimes, but it's from God. So verses 1 and 2 show God giving government, regardless of where they are, regardless of who they are, a legitimate place. Now, they have a job to do. God didn't just appoint people like Nebuchadnezzar to destroy and disrupt and to have all the power in the world so that he could have all the pride in the world. He has a job to do. And from the beginning, that job has been made clear as we look at what God ordained. The job of the government is to punish and deter evildoers, according to verses 3 and 4. Do you know what is good? Do you fear the law? Do you think you have to drive differently when you see a police car, even if you're driving right? Do you have that feeling? So, you see, if you want to get your conscience clear of that, and Paul's going to have a little more to say about that in just a little bit, you do what is good. I have never gotten a ticket for driving the speed limit. I've gotten a few in my lifetime since I was 16 because I disregarded the speed limit. Most of the time, intentionally, some of the time, I didn't mean to be. But God gives us the right to do good. And when we do good, we don't have to worry, Paul says. You want to stop fearing? Start doing good. Or if you do good, there's no reason. And why is that? Because he's God's minister. He is serving God by watching over us. Sometimes, and it may be the truth, we talk about communities having speed traps. But even those speed traps, their detection of your speed is usually legitimate. But they get a reputation because they stop so many. They stop so many. But they're God's servants. They are doing God's will. Even the ones we don't like, even the things we don't like, they're God's ministers. They are an avenger to execute wrath on the one who practices evil. That's their job. I'm getting a letter ever so often about a man that's in jail right now. And ever so often, he gets a parole hearing. And they invite me to come to the parole hearing because he stole some things from my house. And I have a right to go and say what I want to about him being released or not being released. But he's in jail because he didn't do what was right. And it wasn't just me. He was guilty of taking things from several different places. And so the government exercise their rightful authority from God to place this man in jail. And we need to be grateful for that. And then here in verse 4, the text teaches us that he does not bear, that is, the government does not bear the sword in vain. I remember as far back as Freed Hardeman College, going to college at Freed Hardeman, studying capital punishment and having to read books and articles and writing a paper on capital punishments. Romans 13:4 is a passage that any Christian, I think, I've never read a Christian's defense of capital punishment without seeing Romans 13 and verse 4. This statement that the government does not bear the sword in vain. When we read the New Testament, we read about John the Baptist being beheaded, but way more emphasis on Jesus being crucified and the robbers being crucified with him. And we might get the impression on just a little bit of capital punishment that we see in the New Testament that crucifixion was far more broad than beheading. But there are sources that would tell you that beheading, the use of the sword to behead people, was a major way in which Rome, for example, did capital punishment. I've seen pictures of the roads into Rome lined up with crosses, and I'm confident that's true. And I've never read as much about the sword being used as I have about crucifixion. And that makes sense to me from a Christian standpoint, with the focus on Jesus and his crucifixion. But the sword was used, as Paul was writing, in a great way toward offenders who had been appointed to capital punishment because of their crimes. And so the sword is not born in vain. That is, the government has a right to use the sword that's been placed in their hand by God. Lots of debate in our world, and our culture generally right now abhors capital punishment. And we just don't want to be that brutal. We just don't want to be that harsh and hard as we look at our culture. But God teaches us in Romans 13 and verse 4 that the government has the authority from him to use the sword. And in the context, it is in the context of punishing people who are not doing what they should do. So, as we think about verses 3 and 4, it's the job of the government, according to these passages, to punish and deter those people who would practice evil. Now, if you listened a while ago to verses 5 through 7, and you can look back at them now, we have a responsibility, the Christian's responsibility to the government. And that is, verse 5 through verse 7 says, because of what verses 1 through 4 teach, that this authority of any government and any governmental person is appointed by God, and God's authority is given to them, what should you think about that authority? Therefore, because of what has been said in verses 1 through 4, you must be subject. It's not a matter of picking and choosing and paying this tax because you like it, but I ain't paying that one because I don't like it. It's not the way God's message works. We listen to God and we subject ourselves to the government. So we therefore listen to the government as well as God. Because in fact, when you listen to the government, unless they're requiring you to do something sinful, you're listening to God. Why do you do it? To avoid God's wrath. I've been reading through the Minor Prophets again in my daily Bible reading. Each one of those prophets is saying to either Israel or Judah, God's wrath is coming. The day of the Lord is going to be awesome. It's going to be awful. It's going to be like everything in the sky tumbling in. It's going to be something really bad. God's wrath is just not anything we want to be a part of. And if you want to avoid that, in this context, you listen to what the government says and you be subject to what the government says. And then Paul says, not just because of the wrath of God, but for conscience sake. Now, I'm really wanting to take a survey here, so I want you to raise your hand. If you drive, and you've been driving along within the bounds of the speed limit, and you see a highway patrolman on the side of the road with radar, how many of you put your foot on the brake anyway? If you've done that, raise your hand. Terry, I thought you better raise that hand. I was going to come talk to you about that. We do that. Why? Because we are trained as Christians to know that that person is a servant of God, and we're trained to know that if we're going to do right, we're going to be in subjection to that, and we train our conscience in that way. And so when we are dishonest with the government, we withhold something from them that they have asked for, rightfully so, because the next step is to pay taxes. You see, our conscience is going to bother us. You want a clear conscience? You want to feel good? Do what God says by doing what the government says. Sometimes I'm driving along, and Jan will say to me, "Roy, watch your speed." And what I've done is I haven't meant to be speeding, but I'm driving 55 in a 40-mile-per-hour zone because I've come from out in the country into a speed zone, and I'm not thinking. I'm not intending to break the law, but am I breaking it? If they stop me, I couldn't say, "Hey, I didn't mean to do that. Let's forget it." I'm breaking the law. And Jan is reminding me, and there is never a time that I'm aware of that she has said that I've actually been speeding, that my conscience didn't jump up and say, "Oh, you dummy, what are you doing? You could be stopped, you could be fined." Our conscience is going to bother us if we are trained to do God's will by doing the government's will, and that includes paying taxes. In fact, it includes paying anybody what is owed. That last statement up there is awfully hard. We understand that if we go into a grocery store, for example, and they're charging something for an item, we may think, "Man, that's way too much. That's overpriced." We have two choices. We can put it back, or we can pay what they are asking. But if we say, "Okay, this is not worth that much, I'm going to pay this much," and we walk out, every one of us knows we're subject to being arrested because we're violating God's law and we're violating the government's law. And so when we start thinking about paying what is owed, it goes beyond just taxes. That'd be very important to us. And revenue, that'd be very important to us. But look at this last statement. What honor do we owe a president who would be involved in sexual immorality in his very office in the White House? What honor do we owe him? You see, we know that's occurred. There are so many things that we read about that our presidents have done in violation of moral laws and perhaps sometimes governmental laws. What honor do we owe them? You see, we're to pray for all men. Go back and read 1 Timothy 2. Pray for kings and all of those who are in authority. Pray for our policemen, pray for our mayor, pray for our council members, people that have authority to do what they need to do in the job that they have acquired. And honoring those people sometimes, if we aren't careful, stuff comes out of our mouth that is not very honorable. So we need to be thoughtful because what we're doing, we may be thinking, "Boy, that's good reasoning. Everybody knows that's wrong." But when we start dishonoring the office and the person as he works in that office, we're not honoring any sin. We can never do that. But we need to be thoughtful. Sometimes we let the sin that's involved cause us to say, well, if that's the kind of president we have, I'm not going to do anything to honor him. And you see, when we do that, we're violating God's will because we're violating the government's will. So as we look at our responsibility to government, it's pretty serious. And then I want to read with you some verses here that talk to us about our responsibility to one another. Owe no one anything except to love each other, for the one who loves another has fulfilled the law. For the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet, and any other commandment. Are you listening to that? Any other commandment are summed up in this word. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no wrong to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. So as we think about what Paul is saying here in verses 8 through 10, we have the obligation to love. And I want to say again, love is not necessarily about feeling good. Feeling good towards someone, feeling good towards some behavior that you must undertake. But it's about doing what is best for the other person. Loving yourself involves doing what is best for you. And so when Paul says, owe to no one anything, you see, he's thinking, again, I understand, about paying what is due, taxes, and revenue, and honor. You got to do those things, but to one another, don't you owe anything to one another except to love one another. That's pretty powerful. We need to be thinking about doing what needs to be done for our neighbor. Who's our neighbor? We don't have to look very far to figure that one out, do we? Read the story of the Good Samaritan. It has nothing to do with where you are. It has nothing to do with convenience. It has nothing to do with race or an ethnic group. It has nothing to do with religious affiliation or religious position. It has to do with owing no one anything but to love them. And loving your neighbor, and that person is whoever is there in your presence that needs help in some way of some kind. Love your neighbor as yourself. The first and great commandment, go back to Matthew 22, love the Lord your God with all of your heart, soul, and mind, and in other places, strength. And then you shall love your neighbor as yourself is like it. It's close to it. It's the second thing that we ought to be thinking about. Do we owe allegiance to God first and foremost? Do we owe allegiance to other people out there, regardless of race, regardless of convenience, regardless of, you can name a lot of things. We need to be people who love our neighbor. Why? Because love is the fulfillment of the entire law. That is to say, if you took the law as Moses gave it to God's people, and you obeyed that law all the way through, and you did everything that that law called for, you're going to do those two things. You're going to love God with everything that you have, and you're going to love your neighbor as you love yourself. In fact, it's been pointed out a number of times, and it seems fairly accurate, that if you take a look at the first four of the Ten Commandments, you're going to listen to God telling us how it is that we love Him, we honor Him by doing those four commandments. And then if you take number 5 through 10, you're going to be seeing God telling us, here are ways that you love your neighbor as you love yourself. That's what the law is all about. That's the very foundation of the law. Loving God, loving your neighbor. And when you fulfill the obligation to love, you're fulfilling your obligation to God. And in some cases, you're fulfilling your obligation to the government. But this is our responsibility to one another. And then, if you take a look at these last few verses, let me read with you verses 11 through 14. Besides this, you know the time, that the hour has come for you to awake from sleep. For salvation is nearer to us now than when we first believed. The night is far gone. The day is at hand. So then let us cast off the works of darkness and put on the armor of light. Let us walk properly as in the daytime, not in orgies and drunkenness, not in sexual immorality and sensuality, not in quarreling and jealousy, but put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provisions for the flesh to gratify its desires. So now, it's time to wake up. Have any of us fallen asleep? It'd be a real possibility with me teaching, but that's not exactly what Paul's talking about. He's talking about, have we fallen asleep in life? We need to wake up if we have. The night is far spent. Time is moving. We are closer to that end of life, to salvation at the end of life, than we've ever been before. We need to wake up now and listen to what God is saying. Because in the present time, we see so much. We had a benevolent case here yesterday where the police had to be involved. Abuse. We have counseling cases here at this building relatively often, where there's drunkenness, where there's immorality, where there are problems that should never be going on in any relationship. Those people need to wake up. They need to turn back. Some of them are Christians. We go to sleep sometimes, and we live lives as though God is going to indefinitely be out there and give us the chance and time to do whatever it takes, to do what we want to, and then come back and be His child. Cast off the works of darkness. Every one of us need to listen to what Paul is saying. Go back and read through the books of Ephesians and Colossians. You're going to have some theology presented to you in those first halves of those two books. And then you're going to get down to practical, nitty-gritty living of life. And both of those books, Paul says, look, there are things that you've got to put off. And when you put those off, that's not enough. You've got to put back on some things. As you put off the works of darkness, this passage is going to teach us to put on the Lord Jesus Christ and the light of the world that comes to us through Him. Look at the works of darkness. Orgies, drunkenness, sexual immorality, and sensuality. You see, most of us in this room say, hey, that's not me. I'm not worried about that. But when we come to the last two words there, we have to be very, very careful. Because we can be very quarrelsome. We can be very jealous people. And we can look at others with disdain because we think that should be us or that should be ours. And we want to argue about it. And we quarrel. And if we are quarrelsome, jealous people in any way, we need to be thinking about casting off the works of darkness as surely as people tonight who may be involved in drunkenness and orgies and different kinds of sensuality. We need to be thinking about waking up, for the night is far spent. And we make no provisions for the flesh to gratify its desires. Now, obviously, Paul isn't talking about the normal kinds of things that we need to pay attention to with regard to the flesh. We get hungry, and we get thirsty. And every normal person in this room has a sexual desire. Nothing wrong with that. But God directs us in how that desire is to be fulfilled. There's certainly nothing wrong with drinking water and other beverages that are good when we're thirsty, or eating food when we're hungry. And so we do gratify the works of the flesh in that sense, but not the works of darkness that God is talking about. We cannot make provisions to fill our lives up with things that fulfill the desires that are ungodly. We just can't do that. As we close tonight, I want to read with you a statement from Spurgeon. He says, "The rags of sin must come off if we put on the robe of Christ. There must be a taking away of the love of sin. There must be a renouncing of the practices and habits of sin. Or else a man cannot be a Christian. It will be an idle attempt to try to wear religion as a sort of celestial overall over the top of old sin." It's exactly why Israel died. It's why Judah died. They were trying to wear religion by sacrificing, by doing some of the things that God called them to do. But underneath that robe of religion, they were murderers, they were liars, they were thieves, they were bloodthirsty people taking from widows and orphans. And God just says you can't cover it up with some kind of outward robe of righteousness while inwardly doing those things that are in violation of the will of God. We have a clear responsibility to government. We have a clear responsibility to each other. We have a clear responsibility to ourselves tonight. Would you bow with me as we close, please? Father, thank you for loving us. Thank you for giving us such an awesome chance to live with you forever. When we consider the sins that we commit, we don't have to look out in the world to know of sins that separate from God. We can look within ourselves. Thank you for giving us a chance to not practice and have a habit of doing those sins that separate us from you. But thank you for coming into our lives in such a special way so that your blood continually cleanses us as we listen to your word, walk in your precious light. So as each of us leaves tonight, may we wrap ourselves about Christ, fulfill our obligations to the government, fulfill our obligations to each other, and fulfill our obligations to ourselves. And we pray in Jesus' name.